Jesus Christ is risen. It's the good news all the world needs to hear, and you can help deliver the message. The Lutheran Heritage Foundation is dedicated to translating and printing the good books of our Lutheran faith so that all nations may know the love of Christ. In more than 140 languages, LHF provides Bible storybooks, small catechisms, devotion books, and more that proclaim the Easter message. Learn how you can help at lhfmissions.org.
Hold on, I gotta move my mic. I always forget to do this. Okay.
You're only in here every day.
I know! You'd think I would remember. Anyway. You are listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Today is an adventure in Lutheranism. And this is kind of a long-awaited part two of a part one we did like literally a year ago. Mm. So this is part two of the Altar Guild excursion adventure that Rachel started. It was last year.
Thank you for picking up this baton. I've had a very, very crazy year, and my life goal, my bucket list item, join the Altar Guild, is still on the bucket list. So I am still hoping at some point to get some firsthand knowledge. But in the meantime, since we have an Altar Guild lady right sitting across from me in the studio virtually, it's really great that you volunteered to, like, you know, grab this and run with it.
Yeah. You're welcome. This is the part two of the Adventure in Lutheranism Altar Guild. And we'll share the part one, because the part one, Rachel, you did a really nice job of like going into the history of stuff and why women do a lot of the Altar Guild stuff, or maybe why not, and where some of the, all of that historical stuff comes from. Because when I posted the prompt for this episode in the lounge, there was some like, what about the history? Mm. And so I shared the link to yours. So this is a legitimate part two. I am not going to cover like any of the history since we already did that.
Okay.
So today, I think I shared some of my story already. I've been doing Altar Guild since I lived in Chicago. So it's been like 15 years? Wait. Yeah.
Hmm?
Oh, I feel old. But it's been about 15 years-ish since we lived in Chicago.
Your Altar Guild career is older than two of my children, Sarah.
But I've always, like, when I was a kid, I was always very fascinated by what was happening with all the ladies that were taking care of the altar stuff. The sacristy was like this magical space that I don't know that I ever went into until I was at least a teenager, because it was, you know, where very important things were happening, and they didn't want little kids running around inside the sacristy for good reason, probably. So it was this really special place where all these special things happened, and these were the women that got to change the pyramids, and I really love beautiful fabrics and like feeling the beautiful fabrics. And
all of you listening out there need to imagine Sarah's hand motions as she's talking about feeling beautiful fabrics.
There she's shiny metals, the beautiful silver, and
all
the gold.
These things
all appeals to Sarah.
Yes, it's true. I do like beautiful things.
You do.
I mean, and for good reason. So, like, I mean, these are the things that we're using in church inside the altar area. They're beautiful things because they're special. They're set aside for a purpose, these sacred and holy things that we're using in the church service, and the communion ware, and all of the linens and things that go on the altar. So they are beautiful things for a reason. And so I was always so curious about that. And I never got to serve on the Altar Guild at the church where I grew up, because I went away to college and never moved back home. So I got to serve in Chicago for a while. And then when we moved to St. Louis, other than choir, we joined the choir before we even joined the church. But after once we joined the church, we were like, yeah, let's do Altar Guild. So my husband and I actually served together as like one of the teams. When we were in Chicago, I was on the Altar Guild and he just tagged along because
it was your plus one.
It was totally my plus one, because it was mostly, if not all, women at that church. But at my current church, a lot of the teams, quote, are just couples that do it together, because why not? So there's a lot more men that serve on the Altar Guild where I am now. But I think it's really interesting how altar guild kind of works differently in different churches, just kind of depending on the church history of the church mm-hmm. where everybody mm-hmm. serves, what's just kind of been passed down across the generations of people that have been serving. So I think one of the coolest things for me for altar guild, other than just like being the person that manages those sacred and holy things after church service, I'm on the takedown team to take stuff off of the altar after late okay. service. This has kind of been the gig for us. It's a lot easier than setting up. So if you want the easy way into altar guild, do the takedown. It's a lot less stress because you're washing everything. You don't have to worry about like counting the right number of hosts to put mm-hmm. on the altar or filling the wine in a certain mm-hmm. way. That's mm-hmm. more complicated and has a lot more variance. But one of the coolest things I think is taking part in the stripping of the altar on Maundy Thursday and setting everything back up during Easter Vigil. I don't do that so much now because our field work, we have a lot of field workers at my church now and elders. And so the field workers and elders and vicar, they do most of that. In mm. Chicago, though, I got to be like a runner, running stuff on and off the altar for those 2 days. So that's a really cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah.
So that's really fun. And like I said, the traditions and churches are different, kind of also depending on your setup too. Some places take more people to do that kind of thing. So, and a side note story before I get into the rest of the meat of the episode, I think it's a really neat thing that Altar Guild is one of those ways that people serve in the church, that these traditions get passed down through generations. I feel like you mentioned, Rachel, in your episode, how it can be a multi-generational thing, that like mm-hmm. you have the older women that have probably been mm-hmm. doing it for most of their lives. And then you have younger, like teens and 20s women who are coming into the Altar Guild, and you get this kind of multi-generational aspect of mm-hmm. passing down these traditions and teaching the younger women the traditions mm-hmm. of the church and why we set these things apart as sacred and holy. And Ash Wednesday this year, there's this adorable little girl, Aurora, in my church. She's the absolute cutest. And so I was like making my way up to the altar to take down after Ash Wednesday communion. And she just like wandered over to me and I was like, "Hey, Aurora, let's go to the altar." So I picked her up and I walked her up to the altar. And so I was like showing her how we bow before we walk up the steps and like pointing out all the different things on the altar and showing her where Jesus is and the crucifix and our big altar piece. And then, then she like wandered into the sacristy with me and I was showing her all the stuff in the sacristy. It was the cutest thing ever. I was melting.
Nice.
Well, I always knew where to find my girls when they were young, you know, when Ken was pastor in a congregation and my daughters were little. If they were missing after church, they'd be back in the sacristy with the grandmas, helping in whatever way they could, which was usually just watching. So it was so fascinating to them.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a couple other girls in our church, young girls, like preschool age, that are besties with some of the other altar guild ladies. And they just like follow them around looking at what's happening because it's really cool to know what's happening. And so these traditions of what altar guilds do in different churches, I mean, you've got the paraments, changing the paraments for the different seasons, all those different colors, taking care of all the vessels, the flagon and the chalice and the paten and all of these things that have very special names mm-hmm. and taking care of the candles and the vestments, maybe the flowers and the banners. Like there's all of these different details that the altar guild may be a part of. And it's kind of funny that a lot of that probably goes unnoticed in a lot of churches unless something is mm-hmm. wrong and then everybody knows.
That's so true. So absolutely 100% true.
Yes.
No one notices the like 51 Sundays a year that pastors' vestments aren't wrinkled.
That's true.
Yep. Or the Sundays that they did count for communion properly. One Sunday when he runs out and pastor's got to run into the sacristy and get more stuff out and consecrate it in the middle. Like, then everybody notices.
Yeah.
Yes.
Whoops. But it's okay. We have grace in these things also.
Of course.
And so like all of these over the years, you know, thousands of men and women have served in these ways and have gained a lot of wisdom. And so the whole premise of today's episode, I don't think I said this yet, is life hacks for Altar Guild. Because as we were talking about planning our episodes, I don't remember, one of you brought up the fact that stain removal of random things in the church keeps coming up in a lot of different posts.
It is definitely a frequent topic. Discussion in the Facebook group.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that spurned this spurred. Thank you. This idea of
spawned. Spawned also works.
I think spawned also works.
Spurned doesn't.
No.
Spurred.
No. You would think it would if the other two do.
Oh, that's sparked even better. I like that. Yes.
Of Alter Guild life hacks for an episode, because there are just so many posts. And I was scrolling through the posts earlier, gleaning all of these different nuggets of wisdom. And I was like, there are a lot of posts in the lounge from the last several years from different people asking a lot of different questions. Mm-hmm. A lot of them talking about stain removal of different things on different items. So I'm going to run through some of the highlights of these life hacks today for Alter Guild.
So are you going to give us a list first of the types of stains that are inquired about?
So most of the time, I don't have a list, but I do know wine is
off
probably
the top of your head. Yeah, wine's definitely like number one.
Yeah.
Wine on white fabric.
It's wonderful. Ash, or like soot from candles or Ash Wednesday. I think that was the next biggest. Lipstick is another one. Uh-huh. And lipstick is almost harder to get out than wine, honestly. Mm-hmm. It just like sticks. Mm-hmm. Wax, if you count that as a stain.
Mm-hmm. I totally do. I have a tablecloth that's been ruined for most of my marriage.
Yeah, oil is another one from the oil candles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Side note, the candles at the front of your church may be filled with oil. They may not be wax. Mm-hmm. It took me a very long time into my adult life to realize that. So. There's that too.
Yeah.
You fill them with oil. You don't burn down the wax.
That's
for
why
a long
they always
time.
Stay the same height.
That's the same for such a long time. I was like, how do these candles always stay the same height?
Yeah, I don't know when I realized that, but you're right. As a child, that wouldn't have been something that you would necessarily think
it's
about.
It's magical. I was like, they're always so perfectly aligned. How does this work?
They're not. Chalk that one up for one more task for the Alter Guild. Someone has to refill those bad boys, and apparently it's not as easy as you would think.
And it's oil, so like you don't want to be spilling it all over the place. That's a pain, right? And I will say that the lounge has a lot of anecdotal wisdom, which is amazing. There are actual books too for Alter Guild best practices and stuff. There's a book from CPH. There's church year calendars with LCMS.org. The worship section of our LCMS website has a whole bunch of resources for worship that include like the pyramid calendars and all the different things for which season of the church year we're in, depending on which lectionary you follow, and a lot of other resources there too. So there are like officially written resources, but I really like this anecdotal stuff because this is the stuff you may not actually get in those books of all the really wild stuff that people have tried on different kinds of stains that may or may not work depending on what stain you're dealing with. So I went back through the comments, Rachel, in your episode, and somebody mentioned that Alter Guild is a really wonderful way to serve in the church, but sometimes it feels a bit Martha-ish, which is very true. Like the month that you're serving, there's a whole lot of extra nerves going on when you're sitting there and you're like, did I iron everything the right way? Did I wash stuff properly? Did I put out enough stuff for communion? Did I accidentally forget to change the pyramids? Yeah. Are we in a new season of the church year and we're wearing the wrong stuff? Like, I don't know. There is a bit of that that's going on and that feels really familiar. But I'm really thankful for all the women and men that serve on Alter. Yeah. So some general advice first. There was a longer post from Denise Warner, and she actually mentioned, if you do another episode on this, here's some stuff. It's like, hey, we're finally doing another episode on this, so I'm gonna take this down. One of the biggest pieces of advice that actually several people said, she had it in her post too, was to have an instructional binder. This may sound obvious, but I don't think every church maybe has an instructional binder. A lot of this stuff is kind of orally passed down to people. Like you just kind of tell each other what to do. But having an instructional binder with pictures is very helpful because setting all of the pieces up for communion, they go in like specific places on the altar. You're not just kind of putting stuff up wherever you feel like. So having
you don't want your pastor like hunting for
especially if you're
hunting
like,
for something during like he's trying to do the words of institution and he's like, wait, where did it go?
Especially if you have stuff like gluten-free wafers, if you have people with celiac, you have to you gotta know where that stuff is specifically
No
one's confused and gets the wrong things. Right. So
Sarah, I want to just take a moment to apologize for the low quality of my audio for the last minute. Seems the Coast Guard Academy was shooting off their cannons over here again. So when you go to clean this up, they're right across the river, and you hear the boom.
I wondered what that was.
I did hear a little something.
Yeah, I don't know why they're doing it, but every once in a while, random out of the blue, they got to just...
We can't clean this up.
Do a gun salute.
We got to keep this in there. This is authenticity.
That's amazing.
So yes, back to your regularly scheduled Alter Guild hacks now that the 21 gun salute is over with.
That's really funny. Yes. So having a binder with pictures and instructions and the phone number for whoever's in charge is very useful to have. Because we've noticed over the last couple of years, at least, we've been through our pastor that took a call to the seminary, and then we had a vacancy pastor, and then we had a new pastor. So 3 years in a row, we only serve 1 month out of the year. Three years in a row, there were different practices. Every time we got back to Alter Guild, something had changed. We're like, I don't know that I know what I'm doing now. But our Alter Guild leadership has specific guidelines and phone numbers and all of these things. So making sure that people know what they're doing, setting everybody up for success, really important idea here. She also said that, at least in their church, certain people do certain tasks that are like the bigger tasks. So like somebody is assigned to washing linens. Somebody loves washing linens. And so that's what they do. They don't handle anything else. They just wash the linens. Mm-hmm. Other people do the pyramid changes, which can be far more complicated in some churches than others, depending on, especially if you have like a something that goes up behind the altar. In my church in Chicago, it was this fabric that you had to like pulley up and down behind the altar. It was real complicated. Was it a pulley or was it, did we have to like, it was complicated. I don't remember how we did it exactly, but it was a whole thing to like change behind the altar what was hanging there. So people, it's like specific people to change the pyramids. When you have a baptism, having a person or two that it's just their job to make sure all the baptism stuff is set up, because that requires some different things going on.
That's smart.
Changing out other decor in the church if there's like other banners, or one church has like different wreaths for different seasons. So it's okay to like split up the duties depending on how people actually want to serve. The other part that sparked this idea was that I actually had to ask an Alter Guild question, because in changing of how we do processes at my church, we have changed to glass individual cups. And I've never used glass individual cups before. I think it's nice. Throwing out those every week was just like, I don't know.
That's
it's okay.
Kind of painful.
Like, nothing necessarily wrong with that. Right. But we kind of made the decision, our board of elders made the decision of just like, we're going to use glass now.
Okay.
But with that, you know, comes a different procedure, because you're not just rinsing and tossing. You have to wash and then dry somehow. Mm-hmm. And hand washing glass, you have to be a lot more careful than hand washing plastic. And then you have to figure out how to dry them. So we're like trying to think through this procedure. And I told Pastor, like, I know a group of women who can give me some answers. So I was alone. And there were some really good answers. So of course, hand washing is an option, because that's the easiest thing to do. And we don't have a piscina. So the sink that drains directly into the ground, we actually have to wash in buckets. And then we have a dump spot outside the door on plants where we dump all that water. So it's not just going into the sewer. So I think that's still what we're currently doing. We haven't actually come up with a better way to do it yet in our church. But some other ideas were like a metal basket that you can put in the dishwasher or in the sink to kind of separate them. There's also these plastic racks that some companies actually make, these plastic containers that you can put them in to put in a dishwasher, which was really cool. I didn't know those existed. Mm-hmm. There's also little drink racks that are made for cups that you can like hang them upside down. I saw this at the seminary, actually. They have, it looks like kind of like one of those bottle drying racks, except it's made, it looks like it's made for individual cups. I don't know if it is or not.
Wow.
It's a little teeny tiny, and you just have all the individual cups hanging upside down. It's really cool. Or installing a dishwasher in the sacristy, which is one of our ideas that we might do. But, you know, a brilliant idea to just install one, because our kitchen is not very close to the church, right?
Sure.
And also countertop sterilizers, which I did not know existed. So that's a cool idea. And then there was another question about filling the individual cups, because it can be, those little individual cups are kind of tiny, you know, and filling them, you have to be kind of careful. There's a full tray filler machine thing that you like pour the wine in, and it fills all of the cups all at once.
Whoa.
It looks pretty cool. Yeah. I didn't know this. Mixed reviews, though. There were some comments of like, this doesn't really work super well. And so our pastor just opts to use a little squeeze bottle anyway.
Yeah. I've seen that before.
Yeah, I've seen there's a squeeze bottle that you squeeze it. Yep. The wine goes in the cups.
So is it like a ketchup bottle, squeeze bottle, or is it one of those that has like an angled straw so you squeeze it, but you don't have to turn it upside down sort of thing?
Yeah, it's the one you don't have to turn upside down. Okay. Like you just hold it upright and it's got the little spout thingy that comes out the side of it. Yeah. I haven't used one of those, but apparently that's a very popular option. Mm-hmm. We have like the oversized gigantic syringe kind of thing.
Oh, like a turkey baster?
Kind of. Like it's a cup that has a hole in the bottom with a little plug.
Okay.
And so you fill the cup and then you push down on the plunger and it fills each of the cups. I've used that at both of our churches. I think that's a pretty common option. Uh-huh. But so you've got those options. We're getting to fun stuff now. Mm. Candle wicks are a thing that I didn't know was such a big issue, but there were a lot of posts about like, how do we manage our candle wicks for the oil candles? Because we're having like smoking, like our candles are smoking and they're dripping and we don't know what to do with these. Yeah.
There's a couple of wicks. Sundays where we're like, look up front, we're like, woo, the Holy Spirit is powerful today. There are some very excited candles.
Yeah. There's apparently a lot of rules that come along with using those oil candles. You have to follow the directions very closely. I read in several comments, like, make sure you follow the directions that they give you so these work properly. So apparently there are specific instructions for how these work.
Uh-huh.
And you're not supposed to trim them if you use the oil candles. Like if you're having issues with them, probably just need to replace them, or maybe they're too tall.
Oh, interesting.
Because these candles are filled with oil and they have the wick, but the wick, like in a regular candle, you just keep trimming the wick down when it's burned. Sure. But you don't do that with oil candles because of the way that the wick is formed. And so somebody said, make sure you're not filling them too full, because if you have too much oil in them, then they'll sputter like out the top.
Okay.
That makes sense. Yeah. Maybe a little trial and error to see what yours do. And then don't trim the wicks, just replace them, or maybe get a different brand. There were several people that are like, we've gotten the same ones we've always gotten and now they're not working right. So maybe something changed. Make sure the wicks aren't too long. So sometimes they're like sticking up too high and then you get the really excited flames and that doesn't always end well. And getting ash on fair linen is a problem with a lot of this.
Wait, what's that term again?
Fair linen?
Yeah. Remind me what that is.
That's the linens that are right on top of the altar.
Okay.
The white, big white that's on top of the altar. So like ash and wax and stuff are falling off the candles.
Sure.
Like, what do we do about this? So some of those things you'd fix by changing how you use the wick. But a lot of people were like, just cover the altar. We have glass on top of the altar that we can just clean off.
Yeah.
Smart.
Much very easier. Smart.
Yes. And we do that with our communion area. We have this piece of like clear vinyl that we put underneath all the communion stuff between the communion elements and the fair linen. So if stuff drips in that area, at least it's protected.
Yeah.
It's very, very wise. I've seen a lot of churches that do that. So that was like the best answer that people have, was just like cover the fair linen, then you don't get stuff on it. And they also said if it's too smoky to check the oil quality, there's a bunch of different oils that people use in these candles, which I didn't know. Like there's some specifically made for candles. There's like pure paraffin oil. Uh-huh. There's like other kinds of candle oils. So the quality of your oil may need to be upgraded. And very specifically, follow the directions for your candles.
You can't stress that enough.
No, several people were like, please read the directions.
Okay.
There was another cool idea though. Somebody said that they source beeswax candles from a local place that makes like locally sourced beeswax candles. I'm like, that's a cool idea. It would look a little different.
Very cool.
But that's kind of a fun idea if you have like a local candle maker.
Yeah.
All right. Wine stains and purificators. Here we go. So the purificators are the little white squares of cloth that the pastor wipes the chalice with. So like you always, almost always, maybe always, always have wine on them after the service. It's just kind of the way it works. We are always dealing with wine on white fabric. And there's a long list of ways that people get these stains out. I learned something else. There's a lot of things I learned going through this. So I've always just like put the purificator directly into cold water and just let it sit and then wash it. And that seems to work for me. But a lot of people say to pour boiling water over them immediately and that gets to stain out. So I got to try that next time. Yeah,
do it a side-by-side test.
Yeah, apparently boiling water works really, really well to do that. I don't know. In my head, I always think like, oh, if you have a stain, don't put hot water on it because it'll set it.
But it'll set the stain.
I think it's especially like, I think it's maybe certain types of stains.
That's probably, I mean, that would scientifically make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I've had to learn in years of doing family laundry is that not all stains are created equal.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You treat them very differently.
Mm-hmm. And I just don't know the science of all of that, but many, many, many people said
I could see boiling water. Sarah doing like a little side by side. She's got two purificators and she's like, okay, let's do a little test. The cold versus the boil.
It's science fair from grade school all over again.
Exactly.
Then I'll make a little diorama and show everybody. Here's my scientific method. But yes, I mean, I'll have to wait till February because we're not back on Alter Guild until February. But this is a very interesting thing that I have now learned. And Jill Killian says that she makes a paste of baking soda, Dawn original dish soap, and peroxide. And this gets most everything out of vestments. But you may want to be careful using that on colors because some things will stain colors.
Okay.
So my mind is totally blown about this boiling water thing because no one ever taught me that. So the list of other stain removers are, there's a Wine Away stain remover that a lot of people use. It's specifically for wine. OxyClean or an OxyClean variant / hydrogen peroxide, because OxyClean is basically just powdered hydrogen peroxide. Oh. So those work similarly. I soaked, my last batch got very stained and I just soaked them in hydrogen peroxide for a while and that solved most of my problems. OxyClean works really well too. You're using white, so you're not really worried about bleaching anything.
Sure.
I don't know if it's Fels Naphtha. Soapstone.
Okay.
I think it's Fels Naphtha. I've heard of this at some point. This is a super old soap. This is from 1893. But don't eat it. It could be toxic to you. Disclaimer.
Don't eat soap. Noted.
Because it was used to be made with naphtha. I went down a rabbit hole on this. I was like, what is this? This is super interesting. So
yeah.
It was made with like this really like irritant thing, but now it's made with terpene hydrocarbons, but you can still buy it. And apparently this is a really amazing stain remover for a lot of different stuff. And a lot of people use it. So you've got that option and you can buy it online. Vodka gets red wine stains out of purificators. So I need to try that one too.
Cool.
Interesting.
Yes. And then Castile soap, which I like Dr. Bronner's, if you're familiar with that kind of Castile soap. I haven't tried that either, but that would make sense because that works well on other things to get stains out too. Something that crossed my mind while I was serving with the Alter Guild in Houston for the youth gathering the last time. And let me tell you, that was like mega Alter Guild being on Alter Guild, serving 20,000 plus people and then managing all of that afterwards. It was a whole production that has to happen at every youth gathering. But we were talking about how we wash purificators and how ideally you want to like set them aside, not wash them with all of your regular laundry because it's a sacred and holy thing for worship service. And so figuring out how to do that can be complicated of like, how many times do I rinse this and dump the water outside before it's just like too much? Like, how deep do I have to go down this rabbit hole of making sure that I'm not incorporating any of the wine into my regular laundry, especially if you like ruminate on these things? And so Grace in the lounge, her husband was a seminarian a couple years ago. This was a comment from like 2 years ago, but it was really interesting. He said Christ gave us his body and blood to eat and to drink. And since we believe that it's present there with the bread and the wine, we desire to honor and respect it. Right. And there is a point where we can be honorable and respectful without being responsible for every molecule. So pray for the faith to honor your Lord and his gifts and then clean as needed, because we also need to clean these things.
Yes.
And that's something that is just kind of tricky when you're dealing with these things like how far do I go being very particular? And I mean, that's something you can talk with your pastor about. I'm sure different pastors have different opinions of how you manage these types of things because it's not specifically told to us in scripture, right? So back to our stains, soot stains from candles and from Ash Wednesday, because as we all know, when you forget that your ash crosses on your forehead and you go wiping it on stuff, it gets all over the place. So if it's an oil-based stain, which if your ashes are mixed with oil, it very possibly which could be.
Some pastors do. I think it's a much bolder cross.
It does. Might stick better. There's Lest Oil, which works really well to get out oil-based stains. There's also Blue Dawn, which is the magical thing that takes everything out of everything. Right. I hate how it smells, but boy, it works. Mechanics Liquid Soap, that stuff can be pretty powerful too, to like get grease and grime off of a lot of different stuff. OxyClean again. Hand sanitizer is something that keeps popping up too as a really good stain remover, probably because of the alcohol. So I guess you could also just use alcohol.
Interesting.
Yeah. I haven't tried that one on stains before, but might have to try that. Hand sanitizer also removes lipstick. And I tried to search specifically for lipstick and I couldn't find a post specifically about that. But hand sanitizer has come up a couple times as something that lipstick.
Can I just share a practice of mine that I have done? And I didn't realize I was helping the Altar Guild out at all. I just thought it was being less gross. I rarely wear lipstick to church now, but I used to a lot. And now I wear lip balm. But when I'm going up to communion, one of the things I do is take my finger and wipe the lipstick off my lower lip. Before I go to communion, so that I'm not going to leave that giant smudge all over the chalice, because I prefer to take common cup. And it's just become part of like my, I don't know, piety and preparation for communion, just like going up, wipe off the lower lip. I can reapply it later, but I do not need lipstick on this part of me at this moment. Don't want anything to come between me and the chalice. And I don't know, maybe that wouldn't actually make a huge difference, but I would think if lipstick is really a pernicious stain, that it's been a good thing.
Yeah, because those lipsticks, the ones that are like really, really nice and don't come off of your lips, they also don't come off of purificators very well. I know some churches have in their bulletins that they actually say, please remove your lipstick before coming up to communion. So I've seen that in some places too.
Oh, maybe. So I didn't make it up. I must have read it somewhere and thought, oh, that makes absolute good sense.
It is nice for the Altar Guild to not have to get lipstick out of everything. Let's see what else. Oh, Barkeeper's Friend. This is something that I've come across just recently because my husband is now obsessed with using Barkeeper's Friend on all of our stainless steel cookware. It is
good stuff.
Taking stuck-on food off of your pots and pans, side note. But apparently it might take out some stains too. So try that. And more Felth's Naphtha. It's a really fun name. That's hard.
Those words look like someone just randomly threw letters on a page. They really do.
Well, because it's Felth was the people that made it in 1893, and naphtha is an actual like scientific compound.
May I just say, branding has come a long way in the last 125 years.
It's true. That's very true. The only trick that I saw for taking wax out of fabric is to iron it with a paper bag on the other side. I feel like that's kind of the gold standard of getting wax out of stuff. When it gets complicated, I think, is when you have wax on like pew cushions or something that you can't actually get wax on the other side. But I think, can you put the paper in between the iron and the fabric? Does that work too? I don't know.
You definitely want to, because you don't want the wax on your iron.
Right.
So you would want a sandwich. Regardless, you'd want to sandwich it. So I would think that if you were trying to use a pew cushion, then you could try putting just paper and then just ironing directly onto the paper on the pew cushion.
Yeah.
And it would probably take some of it out.
Because if you have wax, so if you have like a piece of fabric, if you have wax on one side of it, you put that side down and then you iron on top of it onto the paper. Is that how that works? I've never done this.
Yeah, but again, you want to sandwich it because the wax... it's gonna once it melts, it's gonna like soak into, so you don't want it, because then it's gonna burn and that's gonna make an even bigger mess.
Don't do that.
Sandwich your paper, sandwich the fabric between paper.
Scientific experiment number two. I want to try this now. science fair for Alter Guild. Oh, that would be fun.
And it's pretty low iron. It's a pretty low iron. You don't need much to melt wax.
That's true.
So it's not like you need a high iron to do this.
Yes.
You just are trying to liquefy the wax enough so that it goes to the paper. You're not trying to get out wrinkles.
This is good. You're my expert on fabric. All right. And then just a couple of things of like taking care of some of the like linens and other items that you come across an Alter Guild. Ironing works best. And Aaron, you can confirm this. Ironing works best when your fabric is slightly damp. That's going to get the wrinkles out. You have the steam function on irons. Mm-hmm. That works really, really well for the purificators because a lot of times they're like mostly cotton. So they wrinkle quite easily. Yeah. And if you don't have a dryer, like we don't use a dryer, we just hang dry everything. They come out very wrinkly. And I don't, well, now I own an iron. We inherited my grandma's iron from like 1970 or something.
Nice. They don't make them like that anymore.
No, they don't. It's amazing. No. But for a long time, we didn't own an iron. Thankfully, our sacristy has an iron. So I just take them to church and iron them there. But yes, the steam function or like getting them when they're slightly damp works really well. Mm-hmm. If you have brass anything, so like our flower pots on our altar are brass, and I think a couple other things are, using gloves can be really helpful so you don't tarnish them with all your finger oils. Mm-hmm. Some places are more specific than others. My previous church, we always had to use gloves and we were handling those things. Now we don't do that quite so much, but I'm not sure what ours are made of at my current church. Maybe not as specific, but I know there's certain things that if you use gloves, then you'll preserve them a little bit longer. You want to be careful and maybe talk to your pastor, your altar guild, if you're not sure about leaving wine in the chalice for a really long time. Sometimes that can start to eat into the metal, depending on what kind of metal you have and all of that stuff. So that's something just to be aware of.
So leaving it in, would that be an issue with cleaning it afterwards, or
I think like long term,
like if you set up far in advance?
So if you set up on Saturday or Friday, like really early, leaving the wine in the chalice.
Okay,
a lot of places, I shouldn't say a lot, I don't know this, we use a flagon, so like a jug, and then the chalice. And sometimes pastor, like you won't actually fill the chalice with anything. The pastor will fill from the flagon immediately before doing consecration. So, and that's just a practice that's probably going to be different depending on where you are. So, but just to be aware of those kinds of things of how the wine can affect. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's policies at places though of what to do. So a lot of the items too, if you have pure silver or gold, which a lot of communion ware is silver, to store them in the proper bags. And I'm sure if you're on Alter Guild, you've been told this already, then you don't need me telling you this. But for people who don't know, a lot of those things will have very specific storage bags that you put everything in after the service to kind of help preserve the metal. Because you want this stuff to stay nice. You don't want to have tarnished silver going on or anything. And Carrie Ill said very specifically, a steamer is better than an iron for wrinkly vestments. A steamer is your friend. That's a lot of fabric, especially if you have like a chasuble that's gigantic or something.
It just keeps going. You iron it, it'll be wrinkly again by the time you get done.
Nobody has an ironing board big enough for that.
Yep.
Unless you're going to like iron on your dining room table, which is too much. So a steamer is your friend, a lot easier than an ironing board. To finish up, I have a couple of quote horror stories. So I posted a question in the lounge just asking for people's life hack best practices and or horror stories if something went horribly wrong and you wouldn't mind me telling it on air. And I didn't get a whole lot of life hacks, which was fine because I just went through old posts and got a lot of good information that way. But a couple of people did share some stories. So Sally Webb Markowitz said that in a former congregation, once the flagon was washed and dried, so like the jug that holds all the wine on the altar, they would insert a few paper towels in order to absorb any remaining moisture. And we used to do that too in Chicago. And then we set it on top of the sound system that was warm so it would dry it. But anyway, we'd leave some of the paper towel from Sally. They'd leave some of the paper towel sticking out of the spout in order to remind whoever set the altar the following week that the towel was there and needed to be removed. The flagon, like the rest of the silver, was stored in its individual bag. You may have guessed by now that someone poured the wine into the flagon without removing the paper towel. Have no idea how she missed it, and I don't know how the clergy reacted.
Wow.
Whoops.
Oh my goodness.
That would be a surprise.
Uh-huh.
Why is there a paper towel floating in the wine? From Linda Becker, One year, the Altar Guild put Easter lilies along the communion rail, myself included, so no blaming here. My husband got so much pollen on his gown, and that stuff is sticky too. Yes, all that yellow. Oh, I scrubbed the gown with everything I could think of and ended up putting it in the sunshine to help. That's smart.
Okay.
Ever after that, I proactively removed the stamens from the lilies and he moved some around that he felt impeded his movement. I found out from my plant knowledgeable mother that when you remove the stamens, the blooms last longer too. So that was a win-win.
Okay. Nice. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a little bit of a life hack and a horror story simultaneous.
It is. That is true. Yeah. We go around. Well, not me. I've been banned from doing this because I'm allergic to everything. But one of my friends, after Easter Vigil, when all the flowers come out, she goes around and picks all of the stamens out from all of the lilies. Before we go home at Easter Vigil.
Nice.
I did it one year and then my husband's like, why are you doing that? You're allergic to Sarah. You cannot help. And finally, a horror story from Amanda Barlow. She said, not exactly Altar Guild, but adjacent. In her first year of marriage, her newly ordained husband had some clerical shirts with white French cuffs. Beautiful, right? He wore one of them for Ash Wednesday. That was a very poor decision. Side note, scrubbing with Dawn dish soap does a decent job of removing ashes from light-colored clothing. And some baby wipes for the pastor to quickly and easily clean his hands when he's done with the imposition. Mm-hmm. That is definitely a smart thing to have a way to clean your hands.
Yeah.
And like water doesn't cut it. Like you gotta have something that cut that to get it off of your hands. So that's all I have. Altar Guild is such a special way to serve in the church. I really enjoy being able to do it. And there's so many things that go unnoticed. So this is also a shout out to all of our Altar Guild ladies that are men that are listening.
Yes.
I am even more in awe of what you Altar Guild ladies do now than I was before this conversation.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing.
It doesn't get noticed. And yet, like you said, it is noticed when it does, when it's like something somehow goes wrong and it's like, because it does make a huge difference in allowing us to just focus on worship and to not be distracted by all the other little things.
Yeah.
So it's very much appreciated by us lowly non-altar guilders.
Yes. And so, ladies, if you have more life hacks, we'd love to know them. Other things that you do on your Altar Guild that you think everybody should know about. You can always comment on this episode in our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can also comment on the posts on our Instagram page. We'll be posting some of these things this week after this episode drops at Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Instagram. Feel free to comment there or take some photos of what you guys do and tag us. You can do that too. We'll share them to our story as well. You can find all of our episodes at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast is underwritten in part by Lutheran Heritage Foundation. LHF translates, publishes, distributes, and introduces books that are Bible-based, Christ-centered, and Reformation-driven. Learn more about their global ministry and how to support their projects at lhfmissions.org.